All right, this is the hour that we take your phone calls, the interactive portion of the show. Michael Rivero standing by, and we'll get to your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Michael Rivero with us. We're going to take your calls as well in just a second here on Coast to Coast. What do you see? Wars, climate change, economy. What's the single biggest issue now, Michael?
I think the single biggest issue is the economy, because the economy is inevitably driving the war agenda. When you have this model of issuing the public currency as a loan at interest, the debt eventually builds up to a point where conquest of other countries' wealth to balance the books becomes necessary and inevitable, and that's where we start seeing these major wars happen. You need to understand, before the creation of the Federal Reserve, there was no such thing as a world war. Now we're on the doorstep of big mistake number three, and we've seen this inevitable pattern. Every time the economic system gets to the point of collapse, they get into a war to try and square the books. Crash of 1907, World War I, crash of 1929, World War II, crash of 2008. The U.S. has already invaded, what, a dozen nations on two continents. Technically, it's already a world war. They're just waiting for the big bang so that everybody says, oh, yes, it's a world war.
Yeah, that could be. And, of course, where will it be? Iran, North Korea, Syria, or all of the above?
All of the above, and even worse, because the ultimate goal of this new world war by the U.S. is to maintain the supremacy of the dollar as the global trade and reserve currency. It inevitably means war with Russia and China as well.
Did you see where Saudi Arabia is a little ticked off at us for not handling the Iranian or Syrian situation?
Well, yeah, I did, and I'm a little surprised at that. They tend to be much quieter about
things. Yeah, that was pretty vocal.
That was definitely pretty vocal, and I don't think Saudi Arabia realizes that they shouldn't be encouraging the United States to go after the other Arab oil nations, because eventually the U.S. is probably going to get around to Saudi Arabia as well, not only to control their oil and make sure it continues to be sold for the dollar, but because the U.S. owes the Saudi government so much money, and a good way to erase that debt is to invade.
What a way to take care of a creditor, right?
Absolutely.
Michael, let's take some calls here with you. We'll go to Lewis in Yuma, Arizona, to get things started. Hey, Lewis, good morning. Go ahead.
Hello, George. How you doing?
Good, Lewis.
A couple things. First off, on Kennedy.
Okay.
Kennedy, you have to understand, it was August 20th, 1961, they started dropping the Agent Orange. And deploying troops over there.
Right.
Now, of course, prior, we had military advisors.
Advisors.
We have military advisors in a lot of different countries.
That's right.
So there's an enemy there. Now, as far as the economy, I work finance in New York City. Work with some of the finest people in finance. And interest rates, when Carter was president, was around 18%. I bought my first house VA.
Even higher. I think it got up to 24% in some cases, didn't it?
Yep, sure did. Well, I bought my first house in 84 using my veteran's loan and was paying 14. 86 is 9.5. Well, what happened was you had Alan Greenspan, who started going out with Andrea Mitchell, and she wears the pants, I reckon, because what he did, and you can pull this on Freddie Mac, and you look at the history of interest rates, the people that I work with said interest rates should never go below 8%. At 8%, that means the Fed's giving it to the lender at 6%. Mm-hmm. Would cover inflation. What happened when Bush Senior was president, it was 10.5%. When Clinton was elected, interest rates dropped from 10.5 to 6.
You're talking about mortgage rates now.
Yeah, a mortgage rate.
Yeah.
So you're talking the Fed's printing money at 4, at 6.
Right.
Percent.
Right.
That did not cover inflation. And even today, we have it at 3.75, which means they're giving the money to the lenders at 1. Or 1.5 or what have you. That doesn't cover inflation. Now, the things that had happened prior was, of course, we had, this is going off on a little tangent, if you bear with me for a second, we had Truman drop not one, but two atomic weapons on Japan. Dropped a second to show the Russians we had a second. Afterwards, we rebuilt the Japanese steel industry. Ours in Pennsylvania were built in the 1800s. The Japanese was built in 1960.
Yep, brand new.
So what happened? Ours went out of business.
What's the point, though?
Well, the point is, they're wondering, you're talking about Kennedy and his enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the economy. So this is something that affects our economy. When our steel industry goes out of business, and then they tax, they tax the companies or make it so you can't do business here, they're going to move elsewhere.
Well, and that's what they did, Michael. We don't have a steel industry anymore. It's gone.
No, we absolutely do not here. And part of the problem, we have seen our manufacturing eroding in this country going back 30 years, and part of it was driven by economics. Part of it was driven by something that happened at the close of World War II, when the United States was the only nation that still had an intact industrial base, and businesses were booming. They were starting new factories. They couldn't find enough managers to run them. They couldn't promote the workers from the floor who knew how to make the products, because they couldn't replace them. So Harvard Business School created a program called Scientific Business Management and a degree program to go along with it called the Master's in Business Administration. And the theory was that you would have this standard interface between managers and businesses, so you'd have an MBA, and it didn't matter if he was managing a pharmaceutical company or a company making donuts or a company making tractor tires. It was always the same PERT charts and Gantt charts. The downside of that is we raised a generation of middle managers with no identification with the manufacturing process, no love or respect for it, and as they moved into senior management, their whole attitude is, well, I don't need to be involved with manufacturing. Let's just send it overseas where it's going to be cheaper. And that's even today, GM, with all of its bailout money, is building car factories in other countries because the labor is cheaper. And it's all driven by that economic necessity. And it's allowed by a government that is completely abandoned, that it is supposed to be standing as an arbitrator between the greed of the money junkies and what is best for the nation as a whole. And that is really the key failure behind all of this.
Lewis was alluding that a higher interest rate is healthy. I kind of like them low, don't you?
I think most Americans like the mortgage interest rates low, but you need to understand that contrary to what Lewis was saying, it has nothing to do with the president's coming in or out. When you have a healthy economy and people are making money and they want to buy houses and there's a demand for mortgages, banks will raise the interest rates to maximize their profits. When borrowing slows, interest rates are dropped in order to try and lure people back in, because unless there is continued new borrowing, the pyramid collapses. They're always talking about the growth of the economy. Well, what they mean by that is a growth in the total aggregate debt of the American people. They use the word growth because it sounds positive, it sounds healthy. Oh, the economy is growing, that must be a good thing. But no, what it means is the total debt of the American people is increasing. Because the only way that they can pay the interest on the old money is to find a whole new generation of new borrowers to allow the creation of new money, some of which is siphoned off. That's what makes it a pyramid scheme. And you always have to have larger and larger populations of new borrowers. When you can't find the borrowers, that's when the Keynesians come in and say government has to continue the borrowing on behalf of the people and without their permission. But when you reach the point where the people won't borrow anymore and government can't borrow anymore, debt ceiling, that's when you start seeing these machinations toward getting a war going, because war forces a nation to borrow far more than it normally would to fight the war, to borrow far more after the war is over to rebuild from the war. And when this horrible three-step process is over, ordinary people have pretty much what they had before, except the graveyards are a lot bigger and they're back on the hook to the banks for another 50 to 100 years. Germany only paid off their World War I bank debts about 5 years ago.
Are you convinced there's going to be another world war?
I think we're already in one because of all the nations that have been invaded. I think they're avoiding trying to call it that, but the reality is, under U.S. military doctrine, when you have multiple wars on two different continents, technically that is a world war. And I think they're pushing for it. And again, go back to look at the history of World War II. Prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, which sort of gelled it all in the minds of the public, there were all these little skirmishes going on over in Manchuria and the Dutch East Indies and Burma, all these little conflicts that were going on. And all of a sudden, Pearl Harbor happened, bang, and everybody said, oh, yes, it's a world war. And I think we're heading toward that moment here.
We go now to Portland, Oregon. Ray's with us on Coast to Coast. Ray, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, George. Mike, I have a very important question. It's related to the banking situation that's going on in this world today. I get about 20, 30, sometimes 40 emails a day in reference to the probability of the currency reevaluation worldwide that's supposed to occur here in the next 30 days. I went to my bank. I have three banks. I went to both one of the banks and asked the manager if they were planning on a reevaluation and that the funds would be issued out. And she said that it was a scam, that there was no banking reevaluation of currency that's in the progress. But
they don't announce currency valuation changes in advance. I think it was back in 1994 when the dollar was revised downward against the Japanese currency, which triggered the whole Japanese real estate buying boom. And all of a sudden, products that you've been saving up for, like a new Japanese car or a VCR and everything, doubled in price virtually overnight. But they don't announce those ahead of time because of the turmoil and disruption it can cause in markets. So I would tend to agree that somebody warning about a global currency devaluation, that that's probably somebody's idea of a joke.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
That's what I need to know.
Next up, Michael, let's go to Essex County, New Jersey. Clark is waiting for you. Good morning, Clark. Thanks for holding up. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I wanted to ask Michael if he ever saw a program called Frontline, one of the Frontline episodes, the one called The Warning.
Michael?
I've seen Frontline a couple of times. I haven't seen that particular episode. Can you sort of summarize it for us?
Sure. If you Google that, Frontline, the episode called The Warning, and watch the video, you'll see how the regulator wanted to regulate derivatives back in 1998. That was Brooksley born, and how the Clinton administration stopped them dead in their tracks. They just they killed it, and they stripped her of her authority to regulate. So if you watch that, it'll explain the whole thing to you. Robert Rubin was the main villain there. Alan Greenspan was involved, Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, the whole crew. So these are the people that collapsed 10 years later, that collapsed the economy in 2008. And they're trying to blame the Republicans. And they are blaming the Republicans. And the country fell for it. It came straight. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, I absolutely agree that derivatives should be regulated, especially because they have the potential for causing so much damage. Derivatives are an extremely volatile type of investment. And part of the reason Wall Street has become such a problem is that they favor volatility over stability because the opportunity for quick profit is maximized that way. It's almost literally a gambling mentality and a mindset. But it isn't just the deregulation of derivatives. We also saw the deregulation the repeal of Glass-Steagall. It's an ongoing problem, and both parties are neck deep in it because they have cozied up to the financial interests because their own investment portfolios are tied in with these various bankers. And the more favors they do for the bankers, the richer their own investment portfolios get. And I think when we start talking about a potential new government for this nation, I think it ought to be the case that for every single legislator and appointed official, not just the president, they should all have their wealth in a blind trust as a condition of taking office, so they're not going to make decisions on the floor of the Congress that are going to personally profit them. We know members of Congress engage in insider stock trading based on the information they get in the Congress. It's technically illegal. They even tried to pass a special extra law saying it's illegal for members of Congress to buy and sell stocks based on information that's being discussed in Congress, but of course that got voted down.
Michael, when people listen to you or email you, what's their biggest concern?
Their biggest concern is simply making sure that they're going to have a way of moving into the future, taking care of their family, getting the next meal. We're seeing an entire country being driven down to that bottommost rung of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And people are literally, they're down to thinking survival mode, where any disruption is going to be something that is a serious threat to them. A lot of people are worried about becoming homeless. A lot of people worried about just being hungry. They're worried about what little remains of their wealth being siphoned off by the government. They're worried about Cyprus-style haircuts on their bank accounts. And they're feeling, unfortunately, very, very powerless because they understand this government isn't listening to them any longer. The banks are in business for themselves. The Federal Reserve is not really part of the federal government. It's no more federal than Federal Express. And the Federal Reserve does not exist to serve the nation and its people. It exists to serve itself and make a profit for its private owners. And we're at the point here where really most of the real wealth of this nation has just literally been siphoned away from the American people, and it's piled up over that 1% who are at the top of that pyramid.
Was Bernie Madoff the example of what government was doing to us in an even bigger way?
Bernie Madoff was unique in that he was finally, after 12 years of complaints, arrested and charged. But he was the exception. And it was almost embarrassing because you had people like Harry Markopoulos who were going over to the Securities Exchange Commission with the evidence that Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme.
Really? For years?
Gift wrapped on a silver platter. And these SEC people would go over to Madoff's company, and instead of investigating him, they would turn in their resumes because they wanted to get on board. There was so much money being made. And it's one example of these various government agencies that are supposed to be taking care of the American people, and they, in point of fact, don't do the job. We know that Minerals Management Service was not mandating and not taking care of maintenance on the Deepwater Horizon platform. Bureau of Mines was looking the other way leading up to that mine disaster we had a few years ago. FDA, obviously, and USDA turning a blind eye to some of these toxic chemicals in our food and GMOs. These agencies are almost set pieces, stage props, to make it look like the government is taking care of us when, in point of fact, things continue to deteriorate.
And deteriorate in a big, big way. So the next few months, the next year, what's your timetable?
That I really do not know. It could be any minute, could be anywhere till 2016. Basically, the whole mess is just strung together tight with all these crisscrossing agendas and linkages. We're just waiting for that first wire to snap that will just cause it all to fly apart.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment. Michael, we're going to take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show, first couple hours, John McAfee will be my guest. Of course, you know him, security software expert, and he was in Belize. He fled there because they were after him, trying to accuse him of murder. We'll talk about that with him. And then, of course, we will talk with Alejandro Rojas about why Peru is setting up its own UFO investigating unit. Again, should be a great program. We'll come back in a moment with Michael Rivero and take final calls. Michael, Betty from Charlotte writes, what happens to all the lottery money? Does it really go for schools and education?
That's a real great question, and it changes from lottery to lottery. I know out in California when they launched their lottery to benefit the California schools, the first thing the California legislature did was cut back tax funding for the schools by the exact same amount. So
technically, the lottery money did go to the schools, but they withheld other money.
It didn't really improve the schools at all.
No. It was a wash, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was basically a wash for the schools. The lottery made a lot of money for a while, and then, of course, people began to realize that the odds of winning just really weren't there at all. Some lotteries have gone completely bankrupt, which means for people who were getting their winnings month to month, they actually wound up not getting the prize after all.
You're kidding. Let's say somebody won $20 million and elected to take the payment out over the 20 years. They're out of luck?
Yeah, they're out of luck.
That's why you always take it up front.
That's exactly right.
Even though it's discounted. It's well worth it. Did you ever win a lottery? A big one?
I've never even entered, to be very honest. I used up all my luck finding my wife.
Well, hey, that's the best lottery you probably ever entered.
Yeah, that, absolutely, absolutely. I call her my trophy bride.
My uncle in Massachusetts, and he's coming up on the end of his 20 years, won $8 million in the Massachusetts lottery.
Wow.
$8 million. He took it out over 20 years. And, hey, you know what? He lived well. I'm sure he's banked a lot. They're not very, extravagant. And, he helped his family out there. And, more power to him. If the numbers are there, they're there, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be a nice fantasy. But, again, for a few to win, many, many have to buy the tickets.
That's true. And
it is long odds.
Let's go to Mary in Salt Lake City in Utah. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have a couple of questions. First of all, Obamacare, we talk about that. And then we talk about saving water so that we don't die and protecting ourselves. And have you ever thought that maybe Obamacare is just a cover to make things look like everything is going to be all right when actually it's not? And I don't know how to put this.
Well, certainly Obamacare is being sold as a benefit to the American people, just like the fight against global warming is being sold as a benefit. Everything government says is claimed to be somehow positive for the American people, but I'm absolutely convinced that certainly in the case of both Obamacare and human-caused global warming, these are really little more than crudely disguised cash grabs by a government that's absolutely desperately broke, and we keep hearing that $17 trillion debt being bandied around, but
that's only what you see on top. Well, I think Michael's gone.
Okay.
There you are, Michael. You're back.
Yeah, I didn't go away. But when you bring in all the unfunded mandates, when you bring in all these other off-budget requirements, the total federal government debt now is actually closer to $200 trillion, and that works out to almost $1 million for every American family.
You know, when they did the bailout, would it have been realistic to give every American taxpayer $100,000 or a voucher to buy goods for $100,000 on U.S.-made products?
You're absolutely right. If when this whole situation has exploded, instead of taking trillions from the people and giving it to the banks, if they had taken trillions from the banks and given it to the people, nobody would have missed a credit card payment. There wouldn't be a credit crisis. Nobody would have missed a mortgage payment. There wouldn't be a mortgage and real estate collapse. People would be buying brand new American-made cars. They wouldn't have needed to bail out all the automobile companies. People would have gone down to their local shopping mall to buy all kinds of goodies. There wouldn't be a retail crisis. What the U.S. government did starting in 2008 was 180 degrees out of phase with what would have worked to actually get the economy going again. But the goal was to take money away from the American people and give it to the banks so the banks could turn around and loan it back to the people at interest. And that didn't work out.
Almost. Let's go now. John in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, John, go ahead. Welcome to the show. You with us?
Hey, bud.
There you go, John. Go ahead.
Well, when I was a kid, after the Kennedy assassination, it was this big rumor going around New York and Connecticut and Martha's Vineyards and all that the Robert Kennedy was told by the Kennedy family to go get the brain and bury it with his brother.
We were just talking about that about an hour or so ago. That it was very possible that Robert Kennedy did take the brain and got it somehow.
Well, the issue is burying it with the rest of the president's body would be very difficult, because if you look at John F. Kennedy's grave, it's basically cemented over. That's a possible motive, but on the other hand, there were so many other players who would have a much stronger motive to destroy evidence in the case. Especially regarding the direction the gunshot that caused the head wound.
Michael, the documents that were tied to the assassination, they were sealed, weren't they?
They were sealed, and I forget when it is they're supposed to be declassified. We also know that shortly before her death, Jackie Kennedy Onassis apparently wrote down what she knew of the assassination and ordered it to be sealed until after her children were dead, because she was concerned about reprisals against them. So there's a lot of information out there, which somewhere down the road is going to be revealed when the perpetrators are all dead and happy in their graves.
It will be fascinating to see what that might be. Where is her statement? Who's holding it? An attorney?
I think her attorney that has basically handled her estate. I really don't know the details of where it is.
Now, he'll be gone. He'll be gone eventually.
Well, if it's a law firm, they'll just pass it on. But the reality is we don't really need to worry about the fine details on whether it's the Kennedy case or 9/11 or the rest of it. We just need to stand up and realize we got lied to by the government. And it's time for the American people to stand up and say, yeah, we're tired of being lied to. I don't need to know the fine details of what actually went down. I am satisfied this government is lying to us. And when the government lies to us, it shows a complete lack of respect of the American people as citizens, as human beings. It basically shows a government that just manages us like we're livestock. And I think the American people are really fed up with that. Nowhere in the Constitution is the government allowed to lie to us. And so when this government is lying to us, when they're caught lying to us about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, they're acting illegally and unconstitutionally, and they're really delegitimizing themselves. Because in my opinion, when a government lies to its people to send them out in a war of conquest against another nation, that is the highest of high crimes and misdemeanors.
To me, that absolutely, extremely criminal, extremely. Next up, we go to Greg in Albany, New York. Greg, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, Greggy. Thanks.
I just got a simple, quick question. Dave Ramsey is a Christian financial counselor, and
right.
He's been counseling folks to pay off debt fast and quick as they can. Do you prescribe to this? Does Michael prescribe to this as a good advice and for the future for us individual as families?
Absolutely. Get out of that credit card debt just as fast as you can. And it's rather amazing, as we pay down our credit card debt, we are getting so many pieces of mail from the credit card company.
From
we're
going to
give you a new credit card. We're going to give you this with a teaser, please. You know, because if everybody paid off all their debt, there'd be no money in circulation, because every piece of currency in circulation or in a computer began as a loan at interest from the Federal Reserve System. And that's why people getting out of debt is such a threat to those central bankers.
Would you pay off a mortgage if you had the way? You know, if it's a low interest mortgage, that's the least thing I should pay off.
I would pay off most of it, but I understand in a great many states that if you pay off your mortgage completely, your property taxes go up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They get you that way.
They get you that way.
Let's go to Rapid City, South Dakota. Hello, Sue. Take it away.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hi, Michael. This is the first time I've called, and
I'm glad you got through, Sue.
Hello?
Yeah.
And so I may sound a bit rattled, but you were talking about the blizzard that we just had.
It's a horrible blizzard, wasn't it?
My deck railing was 3 feet tall, and it didn't come from the roof. But anyway, over one half of all the cattle in South Dakota were killed.
Oh, wow.
That means all the moms that were pregnant, all the calves that were born last spring, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the final words. They say it's going to be...
It's a disaster. Biblical proportions for you folks.
Yes, it was. And I had heard some time ago on a documentary that Noah... The whole top level is Illuminati, and they are weaponizing weather. I think, this is just me, I think BP, oil spill, Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, and the blizzard are all done for a purpose. But I can't be sure except the blizzard. We never get blizzards from the west.
Yeah, but that tells you just how screwed up this weather system is.
Well, we usually get blizzards from the east.
I know. Everything's,
and we've had,
planet's
and,
going through a change.
And just before the blizzard, there were tons of chemtrails.
Well, chemtrails are out there. They are. What do you think of chemtrails, Michael?
Well, I personally have the opinion that what we're seeing are just ordinary contrails of aircraft, and as the air mass moves overhead, planes flying back and forth, the normal commercial routes tend to leave what appear to be repeat lines or grids. The amount of energy it would take to modify the weather is beyond current human technology, and if somebody was going to weaponize weather, why would they use it against our own
country?
Well,
let me tell you my reasoning why I think that's not correct, and that there are chemtrails. Would you agree that the flight patterns are probably the same every day?
Generally, yes.
Okay, so let's use L.A. as an example. On a Monday, you wake up and you see tic-tac-toe patterns all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. If you're correct, that's jet vapor from those planes that flew overhead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, those same planes should be flying the same routes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing there. It's
clear. Well, the persistence of contrails is very much dependent on humidity and temperature and how much moisture the air can hold at that time.
Let's say generally it's the same. In 2 days, nothing changed.
Well, let me take another tack for this. What would be the point of dispensing some kind of chemical at 30,000 feet to sinter down? It's a very wasteful, inefficient way to do whatever it is that the chemtrails are supposed to be doing.
Maybe they need it up there 30,000 feet. Maybe it's seeding.
We're going to have to disagree on this one, I think.
That's all right. That's what we're here for. We're big boys.
Yes, we are.
But I'm right. Let's go to...
Best three falls out of five.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go to Roanoke, Virginia. Brian, it's your turn. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes, sir, my brother. My hat off to you, and thank you for taking my call.
You
my
are
friend.
Welcome, sir.
Hey, you know, earlier on you were talking about martial law and the signs, and
yes.
Also the unmanned drones, and just kind of ironically, in a free paper that comes to the community people here in the good old Roanoke, I call it Sloanoke, Virginia, but check this out, Virginia Tech. Basically, three Mid-Atlantic states, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, their leading research universities have signed an agreement stating that they will work collaboratively with towards supporting the FAA. I think that's the Federal Aviation Administration.
Yeah.
Research and also the testing efforts aimed at integrating unmanned aircraft systems into the national airspace system. And, you know, you drive on the streets or down the highways and you see approaching the technological corridor. Basically, the FAA is going to use the schools here to start, you know, doing a lot of these drone operations, which who knows could help out with instituting martial law or whatever or however, but it's in RoanokeStar.com and just came out today.
Okay,
and,
we'll check into that. And you are absolutely right, Brian. These drones are going to be everywhere. Michael, I'll tell you, let me make a prediction that a drone will crash into a heavy populated area and fall on people. Or something, buildings. Watch it happen.
Well, we know there's a high failure rate of the drones that are being used over the war zones. There's a reliability issue, and I'm not surprised the FAA is looking into integrating them into the air traffic control system because there have already been a couple of near misses of drones almost hitting civilian passenger jets.
Yes.
We know there was one really bad crash near a highway over by the eastern seaboard. They're unfortunately very unsafe devices, not even getting into the issue of how they might be used against the civil population. We know that down in Texas, they're acquiring drones for their police department, which are weaponizable with taser shotguns, full-on real shotguns, and so forth. And it is alarming to see the government literally preparing to declare war on the 50 states and the American people. And
I mean, will drones bomb any car that's involved in a high-speed police chase and they're trying to escape? So you just send your drone overhead and whoosh, send a missile down on them?
I suppose it's possible, but the risk of causing collateral damage that would not be acceptable inside the borders of the United States of America, I think what they're really working on now is to mandate that all cars can be remotely shut down by just typing in the license plate number or some other identifier, and the computer in your car just shuts off the motor and they get you that way. But certainly in terms of crowd control, of being able to have a drone over ahead of a demonstration dispensing tear gas, that I think we're definitely going to be seeing.
Okay, my friend. Michael, we're out of time. Be well. Give us your website one more time.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
All right, Michael. Thanks so much for being on the program. Don't forget, on our next Coast to Coast show, we'll be talking with John McAfee, of course, about his life, about computer hacking. He is one incredible person who developed the business that truly took off. And then we'll be talking about Peru's UFO files. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Tim Banal manning the web desk this week, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.